We finally get some callers today. Still me and Mark Garagos. We talk about a murder case regarding an attorney in South Carolina. I tell Mark, teach him a little bit about psychostimulants and the psychoses caused from meth and cocaine. And we discuss the state of mental health services in the United States. And as I said, we finally get some callers. But first, there's Geico.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, sports fans. It's Chris Howard, former Jacksonville Jaguar running back and 1997 National Championship running back from the University of Michigan. Get plugged in with me every week as I'll be breaking down the biggest topics in the world of sports and entertainment. Join me and my special guests for some honest conversations about sports and life when the cameras are no longer flashing. I'll also be breaking down weekly matchups for NFL and college football games. Be in the know, listen to, and follow Plugged In with Chris Howard now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate. Get it on. Mark Garagos in for Adam Carolla.
This is the end of our 1 week with Adam's hiatus and our tour.
We'll reprise. Let it be known to Mr. Carolla. Tweet him that we should do more of this. This is very interesting and very fun. We like doing it. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Do you know a case that I've wanted to ask you about?
Right.
And I want your kind of analysis.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the gentleman, the lawyer in South Carolina named Murdaugh? Who
murdered people? Is this that guy?
Well, he's now been indicted for the murder of his wife and son. He's also accused of staging his own suicide to obtain the life insurance for his other son. I know his lawyer. I wouldn't say well, but I've known him for many years, Dick Carpoolian, and I haven't called him on this because I don't want to put him in an uncomfortable situation. But it's a fascinating kind of
story.
Story.
There were some,
if true,
yeah.
But what?
And there's some weird money laundering things.
Yeah, they've said that, and drugs are involved.
Well, he went
I've
to
always
treatment.
Thought gambling.
He went to treatment.
He went
right?
to treatment. Yeah.
And did we hear what the drug of choice was?
We Gary, have we? Because Gary was early money that it was drugs. I kept saying gambling, but
gambling, drugs, all kind of goes together,
right? And, it's the same.
Yeah,
I believe opiates, if memory serves, is what's being suggested.
Opiate addicts, there's no telling where they'll go. You know what I mean? They get pretty desperate. They don't normally engage in violence.
That's
though.
What I was going to say, because my experience, at least, is. You don't have that, and who knows, it's the 80-20 rule on any theory, but you normally don't see it play out in violence.
Right. So the time they become violent is when you put meth in there. So even if it's Adderall. So if there is any evidence that he was using a psychostimulant, then it starts to go all into the drug. And is he able to talk about? Does he show any remorse? Do we know?
He's not able to talk at all. Yeah. In fact, I would be shocked if Dick would let him talk in a case like that.
But that's what I figured.
It's,
and he's in prison now? For
yeah, he's yeah. in custody. Yeah. And he's been in and out. And then now with the murder, I don't think he's going to get out. And it's an interesting – I just – to some degree, I don't understand the prosecutorial theory of killing the wife and your son and then trying to kill yourself so that your other son will get
everything.
The inheritance is very Cain and Abel and biblical in terms of its kind of themes, I suppose.
Although when people are psychotic on meth, it's nothing makes sense. They're just very disconnected in their theory.
So it's at what stage does that happen?
Late.
Yeah?
To be pretty good when they get violent. I mean, there was these David Smith was a famous medical director for the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic. Uh-huh. And he was involved in some of the early 60s campaigns about drugs and alcohol. And he said to me once, he goes, you know, remember that old phrase? This is for those of you that weren't around then. They promoted all the time in the 70s, speed kills.
Right.
Remember that? Speed kills.
It was even on bumper stickers.
Right. And he said, we didn't mean that speed kills the patient. We mean that people on speed kill. It's the drug of violence, and it's without exception. All the wild people you see in the streets, that's meth. It's either bipolar, schizophrenia, or meth, and it's mostly meth
and
or both.
What is the interaction between the meth and the schizophrenia and
– makes everything worse.
Right. It exacerbates
everything. Okay. But it's, when people are on meth, it's really hard to tell what you're dealing with. I mean, because they look schizophreniform. They really look like they have, you know, really disconnected.
Is there any way to tell the difference?
Time. You get them off the meth and see if
that's
they clear.
The only,
but and history, but, too. You get the history in there because schizophrenia comes on 18 to 22, but they could be bipolar and brought into a similar kind of state. So that's always the question.
So if you could be bipolar, then throw meth into the mix and that will at least be symptomatic of
severe. You get a more manic psychosis that can be – it looks a little different than a straight meth psychosis, though – meth can also do it by itself.
Remember, you're old enough like me to remember the PCP craze.
Oh, yeah. I was working at the county hospital when that was all going on, and I saw a lot of PCP patients.
And what is – and there used to be the lore, the mythology, maybe it's true anecdotally, of the superhuman strength.
I saw a guy at PCP in three-point leather restraint on those huge metal beds they have at the county hospital.
Right.
Somehow get that bed across the room and pull the sink off the wall with one hand. And he was not a big dude. We just – there was water coming from under his bed. And we go, what's going on? He was in a locked room screaming. And really, they get wild. And he had pulled the sink off the wall.
And what's the physiological explanation for that?
It's a dissociative, and so you don't get the normal feedback from your muscle of pain and, you know, the kinds of things that go on when you're exerting yourself. There's a feedback normally. That feedback's – empty, and so you can exert more.
And so you can exert more, and you don't know your own limits.
Right. Well, not even your own limits. You can hurt yourself exerting yourself and wouldn't know it. Like you can you know, harm yourself with the exertion. And
Does meth have that? No.
Meth – okay. So meth causes a slowly progressive preoccupation with family, friends, coworkers, and neighbors. And,
really?
And the
– what is that? What, is that
it's a – delusion. It's a delusion.
It's a paranoia. Delusion, it's a, but it, what's the sociological
– No sociological. It's a biological – with cocaine, for reasons we don't understand, it's a rapid onset preoccupation with uniformed officers.
With cocaine?
Always uniform. Always
really?
In uniform.
SWAT, and then meth
Navy,
doesn't have that?
No, they go to the cops. In fact, my law enforcement friends go, why are the tweakers always coming to us to help save them from their grandmother? And if we come into a house where there's a tweaker and a cocaine user's out the back door, and the tweaker's like, I'm so glad you're here.
Is the cocaine – is that a function of the paranoia?
Kind of paranoia. It's just the biology. And the cocaine psychosis can be elaborate. Tom Arnold had one of my favorite cocaine psychoses. He was looking in the mirror, talking to an FBI agent who was instructing him to take the white of his eye and cut it off with a scissor. And outside was a SWAT team, he thought, coming to get him. And his family came in and got him just before he cut on his eyes. And it's always SWATs, you know, and it's always and they're in and they put foil on the window. The cocaine users always put the foil
on the window.
Yeah, that's a cocaine thing. Anyway.
But meth manifests differently.
Very differently. So slowly progressive over months to years, preoccupation with family, friends, and coworkers that become more and more and more elaborate and bizarre with time. Remember Todd Bridges? He was shooting a gun off in the streets.
Right.
He told me his story once. He was doing his meth and became convinced that his grandmother had raised his house 4 inches above its foundation. And underneath, his grandmother had built a factory of green men to come up and torment him. And the green men were up there trying to hurt him, and he chased some out in the street and started shooting at them.
Wow.
And but the preoccupation, you really start to believe your family have it in for you and they're going to hurt you, and can be very elaborate. And in response to it, they get violent because they really believe that people are trying to plot against them, harm them. And I've seen some of the most elaborate psychoses you've ever seen. And people, they'll set up elaborate, you know, they start putting boarding up their vents and just doing crazy stuff to protect themselves.
What is your analysis of, for instance, if you can, of school shooters, for instance?
Well, school shooters are, again, they're a lot younger, right, usually.
Right, and normally seems to be white somewhere in the ages of junior and high school to
– And they usually have clear-cut, severe – characterological problems. They have trouble socially functioning. They often have neurological processes. And if to me, the Parkland one was sort of an example of this, where when the mother was alive, he was in treatment 3 days a week. He was doing fine. She dies. He refuses to go to treatment. We have no legal authority anymore to put him in treatment. He's 18, and now here it comes.
So that's interesting, because that's where I was headed. So now there is a movement to hold parents responsible. There's the Michigan case.
Yeah, there's people talking about Texas. I have mixed feelings about it, because every single one of these, you know, Adam Lanza, the mom was killed first, and she was the one that had him boarded in his room. Like, what's in her case, I was like, what is she doing? Yeah, oh, Mike's son, he's just a little odd. That's all. No big deal. He's like, no, you're not allowed to deny this, particularly when you have an adult that is not functioning and behaving in bizarre ways. You have to help that person. But it's so typical of the world we live in, where it's like, whatever, he's living his best life. It's, you know, who are you to say? Who are you to say he's going to die or he's going to kill somebody?
So, Gary, there was an article in the New York Post. The reason I know about it is a judge's wife and the son. And I believe the son killed the mother and then jumped.
He killed some siblings too, right? He was he adopted? Is it that one? Son of ex-judge. Oh, there it is. Leapt to death from ritzy New York City co-op after killing mom.
Yeah, and I've had one of these cases in San Diego as well, with the killing of the mother, and the cops had seen this kid. I mean, this is all publicly reported, carrying a cross in the rain prior to it happening, and it just taken him home and released him there.
Brains get sick just like pancreases and stomachs and hearts, and they are highly treatable and highly predictable. You can prognosticate based on what you're seeing diagnostically, and these are not mysterious. These you can usually know what's going on. We just have no ability to go at and treat these people. It's what's in the streets. Same symptomatically, what's in the street is the same thing that does this. You can't help people. You can't get at it.
And you can't help people because you're going to read an ad, but I'll wait until after the ad.
After the ad, we'll tell you why we're not able to help people. But first, I want to tell you about Bioptimizers.
Certainly one of the best things you can do to improve your health is get 7 hours of quality sleep every night. It's hard, I know. Mind keeps you awake, you got racing thoughts, or you have trouble finding the time, can't get comfortable, you wake up early, can't fall asleep again. Many reasons why people don't get 7 hours of good sleep every night. But it's important, because your body heals itself, particularly your brain heals itself while you sleep. If you're not getting enough quality sleep, you're increasing risk of various conditions, and you make it harder to lose weight. Well, here's an easy way to get more quality sleep. Make sure you're getting enough magnesium. Believe it or not, about 75% of people do not. May help explain one of the reasons people may have sleep problems. Unfortunately, most magnesium supplements are not full spectrum, so they won't fix the deficiency necessarily. There are actually 7 unique forms of magnesium, and you must get all of them if you want to experience sleep-enhancing effects. Magnesium Breakthrough by Bioptimizers can help you out. Simply take 2 capsules before you go to bed, and you'll be amazed how much better you sleep and how much more rested you feel when you wake up. For an exclusive offer for our listeners, go to magbreakthrough.com/AdamDrew to save up to 42%. Again, save 42% on Magnesium Breakthrough when you go to magbreakthrough.com/AdamDrew.
Okay.
So it's LPS and it's all that stuff.
So can we say, based on – this is a medical issue, because I always come at it from – I'm in the weeds with the gun issue. Yeah. I mean, people always want to say, let's ban assault weapons, and that these things, you know, you can pretty much correlate a reduction because you can't get these kinds of weapons of war. But what you're saying
I'm saying this country, nobody does a worse job with mental illness than this country in the name of freedom and doing whatever, living your best life. And of course, we're the country that sort of values that kind of stuff. And understandably, that's what we're trying to optimize for people. But when your brain's not working right, it's not working right. And we only acknowledge one brain disorder, and that's dementia. And that one we have to jump in on.
What's your theory on that? Why is it that dementia, Alzheimer's, that's the only time that
I can't understand it. I don't get it. There's two great books out there that talk about the devolution of our healthcare system. One is called Insane Consequences by a guy named Jaffe.
Yeah, you just mentioned that.
Recommended that. That really goes into the weeds of all the different laws that have gotten in the way, lots of them.
No kidding.
And another group.
When was that published?
And another book called American Psychosis, which really gives you a specific rundown of the major events that led to the dismantling of the healthcare system. The Constitution doesn't provide that the federal government should have anything to do with mental health care. So it always went to the states, and that's why we had state hospitals. Kennedy wrote the Community Mental Health Care Act, which got the federal government involved in healthcare through the NIMH. And destroyed everything that we had in place.
And did why? Nothing. What was the – I'm sure it was the usual law of unintended consequences.
Correct. It was the directors of the National Institute of Mental Health at the time had no experience with chronic mental illness. They all sort of tended to adhere to the Foucault notion, the post-structuralist notion that institutions caused mental illness. So once we let them out, they're fixed.
Right. And because if we're not housing them,
they'll be fine. Right. So hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people were spilled out of the hospitals with no care plan. And they went to the streets, the nursing homes, and the prisons. They don't belong in any of those places.
Correct.
They belong in residential treatments
and
with that.
By the way, as much as I spend a large part of my professional life, cops are ill-equipped to deal with this.
Of course. Not their job
can you
either.
Can you imagine sending some guy to the LAPD Academy and then unleashing him on the public to deal with this?
Yes. Ridiculous. I can't figure out the publication date of Insane Consequence. It's probably 10 years old, something like that.
Yeah. And what's the thesis?
In the name of ideology and trying to do good, we've eroded the ability to deliver health care.
Because we believe that.
5 years old. Okay. There we go.
5 years old. Okay. So we believe that that mental illness, we don't distinguish
enough. It's a choice.
Right.
It's caused by the environment. It's really something that society is really, there's no such thing. They'll go all the way to that. And I don't know, again, dementia we have, but other brain diseases we don't have, I can't. It's too much for me. It's really no other country on earth does this.
Well, what do they do in England?
They put people in the hospital for 6 to 12 months and they restore their lives.
And they also have.
If you go to doctor.com, I do a long stream with a guy from England who is an expert in all this. And when I told him how it is here, he couldn't even get his head around it.
Really?
He couldn't understand
it. How about
it.
Canada?
He goes, why don't you help them? I assume it's similar in Canada.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Yeah. And so
Mexico.
How do they
go anywhere? Japan. I have patients that I've come back here after Japan who are in locked unit for months at a time over there in Japan. Months and months and months.
And what are they? What kind of treatment?
Psychiatric care. All of it's great, and some of it's sort of not what I would do with people. But it's an attempt. In England, they do a very good job with it. Very good.
And
they restore people. They get them to really grow and look at things. And some of them were in extremely bad criminal conduct. You know, and that's what this guy was talking about in the stream I did.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And so he comes here, looks at us, and just thinks we're psychotic as a collective.
He didn't believe it. He couldn't understand. He did like, how? Why don't you – you don't help people that are sick? I understand.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Are we going to take a call? Because we've been very neglectful this whole week,
by the way.
We've
been too into each other.
Yes.
Let's talk to Brian. Brian, what's up? Sorry, buddy. What's up?
Hi, guys.
Hey, guys.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. So my question is this. When I was 16, going from my sophomore to junior of high school, I had a tumor. Didn't know if it was malignant or benign until after the surgery was done. It was benign, and that's good. It's now 20-plus years later. I'm kind of curious, is there any chance of tumors coming back or less of a chance? Any potential cancer scares from people who have had benign tumors removed?
What kind of tumor was it?
It was literally in my knee bone.
All right.
Like it was just
a really big mass
in there.
I wouldn't worry about it. No. Your growths are different than cancers. They just are. And
what's the difference? Because I had, you know, it's funny you say that.
Yeah, a lipoma or something.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Nothing. Our bodies just, you know, are the sort of the usual organized growth. All of us have some of that. Oh, sorry. All of us have some of that in our skin, right? We have
right.
skin growth
stuff.
But
right.
it can happen in any tissue. And it just, you know, you get just abnormal growth.
And so the only
cancer.
Time to worry is if it's
if you've had
precancerous
cancer,
or.
Well, cancer is a whole different disease state. It's a whole different thing. And if you've had cancer, we worry about recurrence of that primary cancer, and then whatever the treatment was, we worry about that causing cancer. So yes, if you had cancer, we worry a lot about future cancers.
So I've what's the state of research on cancer as we are sitting
cancer
here today?
Is if I were to go back into training and start over, I would become an oncologist. It's
really?
So exciting,
right?
I work with this organization called the Prostate Cancer Foundation, and we're funding cutting edge research for cancer, and it's so exciting. When I was in training, we'd look at oncology and go, oh my God, why would you do that? It's just so depressing. There's nothing you can right. do. Now there is – most cancers are, if not curable, treatable.
Really?
Really.
And what is the – what's the
By the
thinking?
Way, worse addiction, opiate addiction, worse prognosis than most cancers.
Really?
Yes.
What's the kind of current thinking? Is it immunotherapy? Is it
– personalized medicine. So yeah. In other words, really dialing into the genetic code of your cancer. And yes, immunotherapies are very exciting. The CAR-T therapies, all this stuff,
right.
very, very exciting. But they're not there yet. We're not really where we want those yet. But the
where do we want to be with that? Because I'm fascinated by the idea of the choices now that you have that you didn't have 5 or 10 years ago.
And depending on your tumor. So in this organization I work with, we would always sort of fantasize about this world where the doctor has a prescription pad for your tumor. Like the genetic code of your tumor. It's so complicated when you get into it, what the genetics of cancer is and how it changes and moves and all the different manifestations. It really is mind-boggling compared to how primitive we were when I was first trained.
So when you look at it, when you say the genetics of it,
yeah.
Is that something where – traditionally, somebody would want to go get a genetic test the minute they
find out? You would have sort of a fingerprint, let's say, of your tumor. Okay. Your cancer would have
and
its
how
own
do you get
fingerprint.
That?
Well, there's various ways of doing it, but you'd have to ultimately be doing a genomic test.
Okay. And if you get the genomic test, is that predictive? Is it something you can
it's more,
edit?
It's pretty – well, God, in the perfect world, yes, we'd be able to prognosticate on it. I was just on a call this morning at 7 o'clock where we were, you know, trying to understand whether AI could be used to look at these genetic markers and then
so
prognosticate.
So funny you say that because I was going to say, can you then – could you go get the genome test?
Yeah.
And then could you feed that into an AI?
The answer is all of the above. We'll have AI and we'll also have the human eye and our interpretation based on our experience with the kind of tumor. We'll have the clinical input, like how is this tumor behaving and what's the overall health of this individual. There's lots of Gestaltian, you know, holistic kinds of assessing that doctors do, but it's relevant. But you also have to do the hard data also.
Wow.
So it's going to be very exciting, and it already is. It already is.
Where do you think cancer research is going? I mean, which?
It's going fast. I can tell you that.
But the idea of cures.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And long term treatments. I mean, you know, it's you know, like, is AIDS curable now? No, but.
You can get HIV to be non-detectable.
Yeah, so you're essentially – you're not cured, but you're living a normal life with it. I see a lot of tumors heading in that direction. Wow. And we're already there. The only place we really have trouble is, you know, lung the so-called solid tumors, lung, colon, those kinds of tumors are really not so good yet. Pancreas. Those are the three.
Well, pancreas especially, right?
Especially.
And why is
that? But there's some, been some breakthroughs with that lately too that I never thought I'd see.
So like
that,
what?
People living 3 to 5 years with it. So we're starting to see stuff. So they've got some ideas.
Wow.
Yeah. It's happening everywhere. They're really zeroing in on important pathways in the process of carcinogenesis and interrupting them. The problem is that the tumors are smarter than we are, and they adjust, and that's where we get into trouble. So
we try to predict. Well, that's so where does AI – is that where AI comes
well,
in?
Well, no. It's more that much like with infectious diseases, if you notice when we have a bad bacteria, we'll hit it with three different antibiotics, three different mechanisms we're going at it. And I think that's going to be the thing for cancer. We're going to have multiple mechanisms so it can't get away from us. It reminds me of infectious disease the way it's going. So it's very much the way infectious – Okay, you guys. They want me to do business. I may go for an hour on this show. Relax, guys.
I was going to say that I'm fascinated by this because I've seen – I go back to a case I tried back in '08.
Yeah.
And I represented a brilliant, brilliant doctor slash – and he had collected data from – ischemia centers all over the world.
Yeah. So and big data, which is another
big data.
Yeah, big data is another thing.
And he used to be able to do a question, a query as they would call it, and you could see from the data you would get answers from it. And kind of what you're talking about was exactly what he was talking about 14 years ago.
Was he at like Sloan Kettering or something like that? Because they're big
north,
on that.
Up north.
UC San Francisco.
Yeah,
exactly. It may be the same guy I was talking to this morning.
Wow.
Is he an Asian guy?
No. But the Asian – well, we'll talk about off the – so I don't reveal any attorney client.
All right. Let's talk about concrete first. You know, I use creatine on a daily basis. Your body only makes half of what it needs. The other half comes from diet. But most American diets are low in creatine-rich food. Concrete, everybody. It's the patented creatine hydrochloride. Favorite for elite athletes, well-informed athletes especially, will use Concrete, C-O-N-C-R-E-T. Number one bioavailable creatine, only microdosing creatine, just one small scoop per 100 pounds of body weight. Yeah, I don't like taking the big scoops. The salt makes me thirsty. And so I like the smaller dosing like Concrete. Creatine is required for functional energy of every cell. Your brain uses about 20% of the creatine. Immune cells need it. Heart cells need it. Lung cells need it. For good function of your physiology, it is Concrete. Right, Gary?
That's right. Take control of your health, both body and mind. Build a better you with Concrete. Register right now at con-crete.com/podcast. That's con-crete.com/podcast for a chance to win a $500 Walmart Visa gift card. Available now online and in-store at Walmart, Concrete is truly life-changing and performance-enhancing.
Sharon still on board?
She is. This is
where I wanted to go next. I wanted to ask – I like her question.
Okay, we're going to go to her right after the break.
After the break. Take a little break. Be right back with Sharon's question. And we are back. Do you want to frame it first before I get her?
Well, we were just talking about where is it headed
in
terms of the oncology and the treatment. And then I looked up and I saw Sharon's question and let her ask it.
She's going to be about hormone therapy, though, or hormone blocking therapy.
Right. That's what I want to
– Let's see. Let's see what she asks. Sharon, go ahead.
So you hear I'm having problems, Drew, and you automatically know it's the hormone therapy, right?
That's what I figured.
And by the way, Sharon, hi, there's nothing on here that says hormone therapy on the screen.
No,
so that's how good he is.
I didn't mention it, and I knew the reason he knows is because he knows how hellacious it is to be on these hormone blockers. I'm on now an aromatase inhibitor, and it is killing me. Yeah. I mean, it's killing me.
I know, and I have a lot of patients that I have to coach through it. What do they want you on it for, 3 years, 5 years? What are they telling you?
Okay, I did the Lupron, then I did the Tamoxifen, and now I've been on the Anastrozole, and they want me on it for 7 years.
Oof.
I've already had a cracked rib. I'm going to have osteopenia.
Okay, so hold on.
Hang on.
Shh. I know it's miserable. I know it. I get it. What was your tumor type?
Pardon me?
Your breast tumor type. What do you know the?
I had ductal carcinoma in situ, and then I had the normal invasive ductal carcinoma.
Okay, and so these
are. Then I had the double mastectomy, and then chemo, Herceptin, and now this.
How long did you wear the chemo for?
I did the chemo for I have like 4 rounds every 3 weeks, and then I did 12 rounds every week, so whatever that is, and then the year of the Herceptin.
Okay. So it's an aggressive tumor, right? It's a worrisome tumor, and they're throwing the book at it, which I totally endorse because the treatment really tends to work. And unfortunately, you have to suffer through these hormone blocking agents. So you went from Lupron to tamoxifen, and did you stop those because of side effects, or did you...
No, we shut down my ovaries where I could take the anastrozole because it has a better rate of working for people.
Right, and now you're getting.
But you're not yourself. You're alive, but you're like a goldfish in a bowl.
Not everyone is as bad as you are, but yes, people do get bad stuff. Are they going to give you some Reclast or Prolia or something for your bones?
Well, I'm getting like some kind of shot. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's going to be the
stronger.
Reclass,
but with six more years to go.
And the shot's going to be once a year or once every 6 months?
It's every 6 months.
Yeah. So,
and the other thing is, you know, mentally this does something to you. Because your estrogen's low or whatever. And it like changes your personality.
Yes, and your sleep is a mess.
I can't believe people would put their children on this.
And your sleep is a disaster.
This is a nightmare.
Your sleep is a disaster.
Yeah, my sleep is a total disaster. I don't work because you can't do anything.
I know.
And Sharon, I don't think we said it. You're 52?
Yeah.
Right, I'm 52. The idea of a child getting a Lupron shot or this tamoxifen is crazy.
I know.
It is crazy.
I know. It doesn't affect everybody quite as bad as you have it. Some people actually kind of skate through it. But I know – I always thought to myself, if I had to take Lupron for prostate cancer, I'd be one of these people that would get a dementia from it. I just know it. I would be so horrible. I'd be so miserable. I'd rather just die of the prostate cancer.
Do you think that in the near future we're going to listen to somebody like Sharon and think to ourselves, this was so kind of medieval – in terms
well,
of
one
the,
day, but that's way
but
off.
how far off is that?
Hard to predict because it goes forward in these jumps and starts. And not every – she's describing the effect of hormone blocking. And some people have severe reactions to that and some people have no reaction to that.
Yeah, but you knew it instantaneously about 23 words on a screen.
Because I see this. And by the way, Sharon is on the really bad end of the scale too. This is as bad as
I'm in a support group and there's thousands.
No, I know.
Sharon, do you have a family history?
No.
No?
The genetic testing came up negative. Yeah. No family history.
A third of women.
I have a good lifestyle. I do what I can to holistically take care of.
So what about here's what about getting on some psychotropic medications to see if they can help you?
So I was one person. Now I'm another person. Now get on a medication and make me a third person.
So you, but listen to the reasoning. Listen to the
crazy.
It is crazy. But you have a life-threatening illness that you want to optimally treat, and you're going to fucking bear through this for the years it takes. But you're going to do what you can to keep yourself sane and make yourself feel a little better. You're not going to feel normal. You're not going to feel normal. You're going to feel bad. But you shouldn't feel.
About that, when you're on hormone blockers, people, you don't feel normal. Blocking your hormones that were put inside your body. You don't feel normal.
I know. Listen, you know what? Listen to this, Sharon. Fertility treatments. This is how women feel when they go on fertility treatments, and nobody tells them. And nobody tells them this is going
to
happen.
Don't do that to yourself.
They don't tell them.
The baby.
Yeah, they make them crazy with these hormone blockers, and then go, hey, we're going to get you a baby. Relax. Like, oh Jesus. Help women. But Sharon, there are two things I would say. One is you might want to get some more consultation because there's differing ideas about the hormone blockade and which is best. And so that's one area. It sounds like you're in excellent care and it sounds like you're doing the best thing you could possibly do. But somebody else may have other ideas. That's sort of my perception of this, that you're doing the right thing. The other is a lot of what you're describing can be the edge taken off with some medication. It gets your sleep better, can get the mood stabilized. You're not as desperate. And I understand. And I'm not talking about making you a third person. I'm talking about making it possible to get through this treatment without suffering so much so you optimally address this really serious illness. And That's all I can say, Sharon. I wish I could say more and take it magically away from you. I'm glad you're in support groups. I feel terrible for women that are experiencing this. I've got lots of patients I have to coach up. What's that?
I was just going to say, I didn't realize that they use a similar variation of this when women want to get pregnant.
Oh, yeah. Well, exactly that. They use Lupron. They shut their ovaries down and then they hyperstimulate them. And then women feel horrible. They often sort of suck it up because they are taking it for the team. You know,
right, exactly.
But I've always said they treat them like some sort of incubator and don't prepare them for what's going to happen.
That's wild.
And then you shoot them up. You know, if they get multiples like we did, we had to do a huge oil-based shot of progesterone every morning. You don't think that gets in the way of your relationship with your spouse when you're coming at her with a giant needle in her ass every day?
I was going to say, it's one of the reasons that I don't recommend husbands sitting in the delivery room.
Oh, yeah. That's true. And we talked last show, I think it was, about the hormone replacement therapies.
Right.
Similarly, we do very little to help women when they're perimenopausal and menopausal. When they get like that, like Sharon,
right,
and it can be treated. It can be really thoroughly treated.
So wild. And where does that come from?
Why don't we treat it?
Yeah.
It came from really the bias is because of the Women's Health Initiative, which was like 20 years old study now, which showed conclusively that estrogen replacement in menopause is useless, causes dementia, causes heart disease, causes breast cancer.
In all cases.
Turned out to be a totally false study, invalidated, and it caused undue suffering. And doctors are still biased against giving replacement because of that study, even though there's data now that shows if you put them on testosterone with the estrogen, you may actually lower the risk of breast cancer.
Wow.
They still, anyway, there's all kinds of stuff going on in that field. You're getting into the weeds with me. Aren't we supposed to get into legal weeds here a little bit?
We were supposed to, but
here,
I
want to do something. I want to ask something.
Okay.
Why can't I sue people for slander on Twitter?
Well,
why can't we start to do that? I could make you rich. I could probably find 300,000 entries of overt slander.
Well, we're going to wait first. We're going to wait first and see what happens with Elon Musk and Twitter, because I will tell you, Gary and I love this story. It's currently, and it was announced about a week ago, I guess, right, Gary, that the trial date would be in October, which is a massively accelerated trial that's coming up. And she being the judge who is the head judge of the Chancery Court, which is in Delaware, which means no juries. So she's going to do a court trial. She's going to limit it to 5 days. Can you imagine that?
Interesting.
A $44 billion case.
Interesting.
And we're going to get this done in 5 days. And we're going to do all of the discovery between now and October to litigate this thing. And now the question becomes, what is the remedy? Is she going to – I mean, because what Twitter is saying, look, we got a contract. He knew what the contract was, he being Musk. We want our $44 billion, even though, Gary, what as of today or last week, what's the value of Twitter, the market cap now? It's much less than $44 billion.
It's a little higher than last time we looked. Now it's at 30.16.
So it's a $14 billion gain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's $14 billion. And what's the – and Musk could be, arguably, I was kind of – poo-pooing this before, this idea of specific performance, that the Twitter is seeking that she order, her honor orders, that he completes the deal. And I was saying, well, I can see that. I've done it with apartment buildings. I've done it in other
things. But here's the thing. If they didn't do it, the board would get sued by the stockholders.
Correct, because they frittered away $14 billion in value.
Exactly.
And I was thinking – well, maybe she'll order the breakup fee of $1 billion or something. We then looked. Gary and I did a deep dive. We looked. She ordered. Now, mind you, it was not a public company, but it was specific performance. She ordered KKR, the famous M&A company, to go through with buying another cake decorating company for $550 million. So she has ordered it. She knows how to order that. And by the way, she has in her last order said that if she didn't accelerate or expedite this trial, that would do irreparable harm to Twitter and its shareholders. Well, that's interesting. Going to your point.
Yes.
you know, she's got a concern about that. It's a public company. Yes. And there's many people invested in it.
That's great. I mean, yeah. She should be concerned about that.
Yeah. And so
she's going to do what? Mandate he
– That he buys.
And
that he
what's
buys.
In – why potentially. Would he, why would he go so far as to do this if that's the way they're tilting?
I think he thinks that he'll be able to prove – Well, there's a or number
could he
of
save
theories.
A, he could save a few billion bucks. He'd
save 10 billion.
Okay.
Or that they, mind you, I've also said, take a look at the law firms involved. Each side's got a litigation firm, but each side's also got a firm that's got a robust mergers and acquisition. Yes. So this is, somebody called this a litigation orgy of money. So that's exactly what it's meaning. Can you imagine the bills that will be generated by the law firms involved, which is now compressed? And then I heard one wag say, interestingly, the associates at those firms are going to be working 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just you're going to be billing. You sleep at the office.
Oh, yeah. You have to do it all in three months.
3 months.
Well, back to my complaint.
Yes.
What are we waiting for when I can start to do that? Because it really is.
Well, at a certain point, it'll be interesting to see once this is over and once we see what the – there will be some discovery on the bots issue and on the phony the phony accounts issue. It'll be interesting to see how much Twitter knew when they knew it because at least in my experience, it's clear that there were bot factories.
I see how your brain's working. You want to go after the big – deep pocket. Exactly. You want me to sue Twitter, not the asshole.
Sitting on his mom's in his mom's basement. See, what are you going to get there? Maybe the homeowner's policy.
I want $50 from each of those guys because there's 500,000 of them.
Let me ask you guys though. You guys are avid users of Twitter. Do you believe that 95% of Twitter accounts are real people? Because that's what Twitter's saying.
I believe that 85% are.
Well,
I
would be surprised. If their sampling technique, Twitter's, is inaccurate because they're a public company and they're reporting to the SEC, and it's supposedly a robust sample. Mm. If they can prove, if Musk can prove that they're hoodwinking both the public and the SEC, then he's got a whale of a defense. Yeah. But he's going to have to get into discovery to decide that.
It's going to be interesting, and it's going to be interesting to even know I'd like to know how those bots are generated. Do you know? Because they seem different to me. Some of them are like
well, there's a variety of different bots.
Like I feel like some people manage the bots sometimes.
Correct. That's true.
And I feel like sometimes the bots are just random AI kinds of things.
That's true as well.
So I encounter all of them. But they're not the ones that are most disturbing, I got to tell you. The ones that are really disturbing are the people that get down and dirty and have no business. Really, it should be illegal to say some of the things they say.
Well, I'm one of the robust free speech guys.
Me too. I wouldn't restrict their free speech, but I'd slap them in the face.
Well, they're, you
punch
know, they're,
them in the nose for
it,
something.
It used to be that the U.S. Supreme Court used to say, well, if you've got a violation here, we're not going to exclude the evidence. We're going to say you've got a civil remedy. And, you know, I used to believe that. The Supreme Court has eradicated that as of late. So I'm not so sure that to say, okay, robust speech, but then you've got a remedy. It just doesn't seem like there is a robust remedy.
For the bots.
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, it just doesn't. I mean,
does that matter?
Well, yeah, because to some degree, remember, who's going to take this case? High net worth people will do it. Mm. I mean, they'll do it for sport. Mm. What Adam always calls "fuck me" money. Mm. But the idea of suing a AI, unless there's something behind it or an entity behind it that's got a deep pocket, unfortunately, contingency lawyers aren't going to work for free, and they need to have some kind of a pot at the end of the rainbow.
So we got to prove that Twitter has this malicious intent. And then we can go after Twitter.
We're going to find out by October whether or not they've been hoodwinking the public and the SEC. So
if they are, I'll join you.
Buckle in. We'll take it. Yeah, buckle in because then I may take you on contingency.
All right. Well, then I will join you in that case. But first, I want to remind everybody about Blinds Galore, family owned and run for over 20 years, over 2 million windows and counting. First place to buy custom window treatments online. Blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, even motorized coverings that we all love. Connect them to your smartphone or your whatever your home – what are they called? Eliza? What's the name of the
– Smart speaker.
Smart speaker. There you
Alexa.
Go. Alexa. There you go. That catches them all. Just take measurements and design. The online visualizer lets you see what they look like right on the screen before you buy. But you're not doing it alone because they want you to be happy. They get their expert customer care team involved with every step of the way, either online or over the phone. They will send you samples. They have free shipping. The expertise is free. It just doesn't get better than this. These guys have been doing it forever. It's family run, as I said, and they want you to be happy. They know how to do this, right, Gary?
That's right. BlindsGalore.com makes it very easy to get the high-quality designer blinds and shades you've always wanted in your home, all at a great price. Order your free samples today to get started at BlindsGalore.com and let them know Adam sent you. That's BlindsGalore.com.
I don't think I want Adam to come back. Let's just keep doing the show together.
I enjoyed this. I hope Adam's listeners miss him terribly, but enjoy.
I hope he's so tired he just wants to take another week off. Or wants to go elsewhere to promote the
book. Well, you know, if the book hits number one, which I expect it will, he may just take a victory tour.
Good. we let him know. We'll both let him know that without upsetting his ego, like we got to let him know he's missed, but that we're fine and we'd love to do this again sometime.
Absolutely.
All right, my friend. Good talk to you all soon. We'll see you next time. This is Dr. Drew on behalf of Mark Aragos and the absent Adam Carolla telling you mahalo.
Do you own, do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.